I'm Jim Eltringham. This is my crummy little podcast.
Forty years ago this month, October 11th, 1975, was the premiere episode of Saturday Night Live. But one thing that hasn't changed over the years is that Saturday Night Live has remained a spot where every week you get social commentary and you get a lot of political commentary. And joining us today on the Crummy Little Podcast to talk about Saturday Night Live is someone who also does all those things. Coming back to the podcast is Matt Lewis. Matt, thank you for coming back to this Crummy Little Podcast.
Hello, Jim. Good to be back.
And it's good to have you, especially because I know you and I have chatted a lot over the years about the intersection between culture and politics, and it seems like that happens almost weekly on Saturday Night Live. It's going to happen tons more between now and November 2016, and in fact, they already had their very first sketch of the 2016 campaign cycle. Hillary Clinton made a cameo last week. What did you think about that?
So I only saw the clips, but I thought her impersonation of Donald Trump was really good. Pretty hilarious. And I wondered if the, you know, if like the SNL crew like worked with her to get that down, or if she just happens to be a really good impersonator, because it was quite good.
Hillary Clinton seemed a lot less creepy, probably less creepy than she seemed at any point in this cycle.
Yeah, I thought she was quite likable. You know, maybe 15% of the time she's utterly charming, and the rest of the time she's pretty inauthentic, but this was a really good moment for her. And it matters. I mean, I was listening recently to something about Gerald Ford. I forget where, but they were talking about how Chevy Chase really hurt him with those, you know, falling down sketches back in the 70s. And I think SNL like can really hurt you or really help you. And I think it helped Hillary this week.
That's a good person to bring up in Gerald Ford, because Gerald Ford was the president when Saturday Night Live debuted. The Ford administration actually sent an official onto the show. They had Gerald Ford pre-recorded do the opening, the live from New York at Saturday Night. And then while they had that official on the show, they proceeded to do probably some of their most edgy stuff of the first season. That was the one where they did the Bass-O-Matic 76, where Dan Aykroyd drops a fish into the blender on live TV and just makes a complete and utter mess of fish guts. Now this past week, when Hillary Clinton was on the show, they didn't really pull as many punches. You still had Kate McKinnon doing her Hillary Clinton impersonation as a wild-eyed, power-hungry sociopath. So even though it was a good moment for her, they really didn't pull as many punches as they probably could. They didn't seem starstruck.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think like comedy has to be edgy, and even though, you know, let's be honest, SNL leans leftward, they also lean toward humor and edginess, and you can't like carry water and be funny. It's not funny. Propaganda is just not funny. So I think they need to go after everybody equally, and that's when they're at their best. I do feel sorry for Gerald Ford, because I think that he just happened to be unfortunate enough to be the guy who like was president at the moment that everything changed and that SNL became a thing. And, you know, sounds like they tried to handle it as best they could, but, you know, there's certain people that it just can destroy. I mean, I think Sarah Palin was, you know, you can't blame all of her problems on the show, but clearly it had an impact.
Sort of like a funhouse mirror, that whatever is your worst quality, that's what SNL latches onto. And it's not necessarily that they break new ground. It's not that people thought that Gerald Ford or Sarah Palin were these intellectual heavyweights, and then they saw Saturday Night Live and they said, nope, I like this version better. That's something that was already in the back of people's minds, and they just see it writ large on SNL.
I mean, I think that's when it's at its best, right? And so I think there are a couple of examples. The one that really comes to mind, though, is being schizophrenic is Ronald Reagan, you know, who is normally portrayed as this affable dunce, but there's that great, I think it was Phil Hartman's sketch,
yes,
where Reagan is portrayed as this like Machiavellian figure who's secretly running everything. And I love that sketch.
That sketch is great, and it kind of works because they have the Reagan that you know, the avuncular title holder of President of the United States, shaking hands with the Girl Scout who sold the most cookies, and then ushering her out of the Oval Office, and then turning around and saying to everyone, back to work, you know, speaking Arabic on the phone as he's negotiating an arms deal. That's funny, because as much as SNL retreads their old characters sometimes or is self-referential, I was surprised they never did that with George W. Bush.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because that seems like they could have just dusted off the same old sketch and run it again.
I was just listening to, because, you know, I'm writing this book about, it's called Too Dumb to Fail. And it goes into the trope that Reagan, you know, the false trope that Reagan was dumb. And there's a quote from Charles Krautheimer, and I got this off, he was on Bill Kristol's podcast, but Krautheimer was saying, like, he met with Reagan, and Reagan, like, wouldn't talk to him about anything important, like, wanted to talk about sports and movies and stuff. And it took Krautheimer a while to figure out that, like, Reagan really was this this really sort of smart guy, and that he was basically playing everybody. And I think it was Krautheimer, it might have been Fred Barnes, they both have sort of corroborated this same, you know, same story, but one of them said that SNL skit was actually, like, pretty close to the truth.
Well, that's the best comedy comes from an element of truth, so I'm sure that there were a few people who were in the room and portrayed as being in the room who were probably chuckling at it. You wrote a piece a couple months ago, after Kate McKinnon started doing her Hillary Clinton impersonation, saying that this was, if anything's going to lose the White House for Hillary Clinton, it's going to be this. It's not going to be congressional hearings. It's not going to be email. It's going to be that SNL character is striking a chord that everyone in their heart of hearts believes that for the past 22 years at least, and probably for the past 40 years, Hillary Clinton has wanted nothing more than to be president. Meanwhile, you've got George W. Bush, who is portrayed as a dunce, wins two terms. Does having a bad Saturday Night Live impression, does it matter what your Saturday Night Live impression is?
Yeah, I think it does. I mean, I think that sometimes they're endearing. Okay, so I actually think the George W. Bush impression was endearing. And by the way, Bush played into this. I mean, he liked being, quote, misunderestimated. There's a story from 1976 where George W. Bush loses a congressional race in Texas because he's seen as this elite.
Because he comes from the Bush family of Eastern elites.
Yeah, he's seen as this Ivy League educated preppy, and George W. Bush vows to, quote, never be out-countried again. So Bush, in some ways, created this persona, but I think it made him kind of likable. I mean, especially the Will Ferrell stuff. I mean, I would say the same thing about Bill Clinton, the Bill Clinton impersonations from was it Phil Hartman in the early 90s where he went jogging to McDonald's and stuff?
Yes.
Those were great, and I think they, in a way, actually help the candidate by, you know, that's just W being W, or that's just Bubba being Bubba. So in some cases, I think they actually help you. But again, they can also be devastating, as we saw with Palin. So it can go either way.
Now, of the contenders for 2016, and we don't have to go through everybody who's filed papers, because who would probably have the best Saturday Night Live impression?
Well, I think obviously Donald Trump, except it does create a dilemma. Can you – like, Donald Trump is already a caricature. I mean, he's already a satirical figure. So, like, I wonder if they can – like, I'll ask you, Jim. I mean, it seems like Trump would be the most fun, but can they spoof Trump more than Trump spoofs Trump?
I think that with Trump, you'd have to go the opposite, right? You'd almost have to have that quote unquote smart Reagan sketch about him where he's trying to advance policy ideas and everyone else around him is just throwing out red meat. You'd have to have a sketch where he's sitting down with advisors and sitting there saying, I had something to talk about with this highway bill, and he's throwing out all kinds of different figures and facts of where stuff would go. And people are like, no, you're too in the weeds on this.
Roger Stone.
Isn't that how you'd have to go?
That would be great. And then the cameras come in, and he says, he insults people and says controversial stuff. And then they leave, and he's serious and thoughtful and scolds his staff for ad hominem attacks on people.
there was another – did you ever see the episode that George Steinbrenner hosted?
I think I probably did, but
– There's a sketch within that episode where George Steinbrenner – and I think this was when he was banned from baseball the second time in like the early 90s. Or maybe he had just gotten reinstated, but they have this sketch where he plays the manager of a convenience store, and you walk into this convenience store, and there's no customers, but there are plenty of people just hanging around, employees, everyone with the red vest, and Phil Hartman plays the assistant manager who takes him aside and says, listen, sir, you've got to fire some of these people. And George Steinbrenner says, no, I just don't know. How do you do that? How do you fire a guy? And this is just after he had gone through like 8 managers in 3 years with the Yankees. So it almost would have to be the same thing. But I got to think that Joe Biden would have a pretty good.
Biden could be good. Too bad Chris Farley's not alive, because Chris Christie could be funny. Rick Perry could have been good. You could have had Will Ferrell basically do the George W. Bush thing. How about Carly Fiorina? That could be fun.
Yeah, Carly Fiorina. I was thinking about this. The tough thing with SNL lately is that they do seem to have this this bent towards being very, I don't want to say hipsterish, but they've got this urban New York feel to them lately that I don't know that they've always had, and I don't know if it's fashionable with that bent to go after a woman for being essentially a ball-breaking CEO, which is where you'd have to go with Carly Fiorina, right?
Probably. By the way, let me not to change subjects, but I want to jump back to Steinbrenner for a minute. I recently heard what's his name, Larry David, say that – because, Larry David played Steinbrenner on Seinfeld.
Yes.
And Larry David recently on some podcast said that they actually booked Steinbrenner to actually be on an episode, and he was so bad they couldn't use the footage. They just never used it.
Yeah, there was some controversy over that, because it was the one where George's fiance Susan dies.
Yeah.
And they, by the way, it's not changing the subject, because Larry David was an SNL writer.
Oh yeah,
so
this is all pre-planned here.
Exactly. But yeah, so there were rumors, and I don't know if it was something that the Steinbrenner camp put out there, that he, after learning that there was a death in the episode that was treated very cavalierly, that he did not want anything to do with it. It seems odd to me that Steinbrenner would be bad. Like, it just because Steinbrenner had an episode of Saturday Night Live that he hosted, which he was not too bad on. He also had an appearance in the 1994 film The Scout as himself, where he essentially played what everyone thinks of when they think of George Steinbrenner. And he was actually not too bad in that either.
Well, I was just telling I was talking to somebody here at the office, I think literally just yesterday, about how one of my favorite Seinfeld episodes was when they thought that George died. And Steinbrenner had to call up Frank Costanza to give his condolences, and Frank's like, how could you trade Danny Tartable? something like that. He was like upset with him over some trades that he made.
And not to fact check you, but it was Jay Buhner.
Okay. My apologies there.
No,
but
okay.
Still.
No, because everybody wanted Danny Tartable out of town, by the
okay.
way.
Okay.
It's funny, when I look at Donald Trump and I think about those George Steinbrenner impersonations, I feel like I'm watching two different people play the same character. Because Trump is essentially running as George Steinbrenner from the late 80s. I'm going to get things done. If someone doesn't do something right, I'll fire them.
How much do you think, speaking of, I mean, this is like SNL-esque, how much of Jack Donaghy do you think was based on Donald Trump?
Oh, that's a good question.
I mean, so Trump exists in the 30 Rock universe. They mentioned Donald Trump multiple times. But I feel like part of the Jack Donaghy character must have been based on Trump.
It had to be based on Trump, but I also feel like everything on that show is so inside baseball that if there's someone and I can't place who they're based on right off the bat, I assume that there's somebody working in 30 Rockefeller Center, and I assume that there's an NBC executive somewhere in 30 Rockefeller Center who, when Tina Fey was on Saturday Night Live, she said, one day I'm going to have a sitcom, and that guy's going to be a character. That person may not even know that they've been immortalized as
right.
as Jack Donaghy, but so it's probably an amalgamation of characters. I don't know. I wonder if they've ever gone into that.
Yeah, someone needs to do an investigative podcast on that. Get to the bottom.
We'll get the boys down in the research department working on that. That'll give them something to do this weekend.
Okay.
So you mentioned actually one of the sketches that I was going to bring up, which is the Smart Reagan sketch, which I absolutely love. Other than that, what are some of your favorite political Saturday Night Live sketches from the years?
I mean, so most of my stuff is from a bygone era. Like I feel like everybody kind of has their sort of era of SNL. And so mine is like from 1984 to 1992 is basically when I watched every episode every week. So like most of my best stuff. And then as a kid, I would rent, I would go to Wonder Book and Video or Blockbuster Video, and I would rent like old SNL, like Eddie Murphy, that era, or Chevy Chase. So basically, it's the modern stuff that I'm not as familiar with. So one that stands out to me is like the 1992 debate was very good. where you had Ross Perot. I thought that
right. And you had Dana Carvey playing both, because Dana Carvey played George H.W.
Yeah.
Bush, probably one of the best presidents impersonations
that's
been on. I mean, if you want to talk about being defined by an impression, there are probably people from that era who know Dana Carvey as George H.W. Bush.
I think about this all the time because there was one thing, I don't think it was the debate, but there was one Dana Carvey as George H.W. Bush skit where he said, he would say something like, Dan Quayle, improving every day.
Still gaining acceptance.
And then he says, Barbara, ready to die. I have no idea what the hell that's apropos of, but I find it hilarious. But I can't bring it up, like, because it's number one, it's a horrible thing to say, but number two, like, nobody except for you would even get the reference.
I probably wouldn't have gotten the reference from the sketch, but I would have at least gotten the impression of it. And then meanwhile, you mentioned this debate sketch. Not only is he playing George H.W. Bush, he's pulling double duty as Ross Perot because he had a fantastic Ross Perot impersonation.
Yeah, really good. Really good Ross Perot. And then was it Hartman as Clinton?
And Phil Hartman as Bill Clinton.
And that was the one where, like, at the end, each person is given a minute to, a little final words. And as each person says their final words, one of the other candidates has, like, a vision of what the person looks like, right? So, like,
that's right.
When Bill Clinton's giving his final words, like, Bush is imagining, like, him, like, this hippie, like, pot smoking and stuff. And I think for Perot, it was a munchkin from The Wizard of Oz
that's right.
That they saw.
That's right. You have Bush and Clinton just kind of narrow their eyes and look at him, and then you hear Ross Perot talking about a clip of The Wizard of Oz.
Was there a line? Did Perot say something like, "Can you believe I'm losing to these two guys?" or something like that?
No, but that was from 4 years earlier.
Oh, Dukakis.
That was John Lovitz as Michael Dukakis.
Right.
Can't believe I'm losing to this guy.
That's right. That's right. That was a good one too. Was that the one where that had Dukakis? He gets up to the podium, and he like pushes a button, and it like elevates him to make him taller. Then he's too tall, and he has to come back down. Oh man. I just learned, by the way, did you know that Jason Chaffetz was that Jason Chaffetz's father was Kitty Dukakis' first husband, and that Jason Chaffetz ran the Utahns for Dukakis campaign in 1988?
Someone told me this, and then I had to ask them to explain it, and somewhere as we were erasing and redrawing the whiteboard where all the lines would go, I gave up, and
yeah,
like, I'm lost. I've also heard, speaking, you mentioned debates, one of the, I don't know if it was really all that funny, but one of the more significant SNL sketches might have been with the 2000 debates, where Will Ferrell's George W. Bush coins the term strategery, which then goes on to be actually used in Washington for the next decade.
Still using it
as if it's a real word and not just something that was made up in a SNL
sketch. Well, the scary thing is people probably think Bush actually said it, just like people think Sarah Palin said, "I can see Russia from my front porch," from my front yard or whatever. It was actually Tina Fey who said that, not Sarah Palin.
And from Will Ferrell saying it to the smug look of self-satisfaction he gives
thing, like every time Bush would say something, Prime Minister Musharraf, and if he got it right, this look of joy came across his face that he had pronounced it right. It was hilarious.
They nailed that. And on the other side, on the flip side, you had Al Gore droning on about lockboxes, which he actually did talk about in that debate.
Right.
And the rumor coming out of that debate was that Gore's aide sat him down with the tape of that sketch and said, no, you got to watch this because this is what people think of you. So lighten up.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, they probably – you imagine Bush's advisor sitting him down saying, this is what people think of you, and him saying – all right, well, it looks like I got the biggest laugh line, so on we go to November.
All right. Okay, see, I want to go back to the other Bush, though, the Dana Carvey Bush. So I don't think that hurt him. I don't think – so first of all, my George H.W. Bush impersonation is actually an impersonation of Dana Carvey doing George H.W. Bush. And, I mean, clearly it made him look like – a bit of a wimp, but I don't think it hurt him at all. Do you?
No, I think you're right on with that. And I would say the same for Will Ferrell's George W. Bush impersonation. I don't think either Bushes were hurt by their impersonations on Saturday Night Live.
I mean, I think, so I feel like the only people who've Gerald Ford, if I were to rank it, I would say Sarah Palin, devastated by
yes.
SNL. Gerald Ford, severely hurt by SNL. I don't think – now, the verdict is out. The jury is out on Hillary. But I don't think anyone else has really – I can't think of another politician who has really been hurt by them, even if people have made fun of them, even if it's been – am I missing something?
No, and I was going to say the only other president we haven't talked about was Dan Aykroyd's Jimmy Carter.
Well, we haven't talked about Obama yet either.
Oh, that's true. But they've been pretty kind, I thought, to Obama.
What about Dan Aykroyd's Jimmy Carter? I don't remember that one really.
There's not a whole lot. There are two sketches I remember, but they portrayed him as being very super competent, but in the weeds. So the rumor on Jimmy Carter is the whole, he would schedule the tennis courts at the set the schedule for the White House tennis courts.
I think it's true, actually.
Which, yeah, I mean, so they went into that. So there were two sketches. One was when Three Mile Island happened. They show Jimmy Carter touring the facility and looking over the console, and the technicians are describing what happened. And he picks up an empty paper cup and says, "Boys, I think this might be the Pepsi syndrome," basically implying that they had just spilled their drinks all over it. The sketch ends with him becoming like a 50-foot-tall behemoth because he goes into the reactor to fix something. So there's that one. And then my favorite Jimmy Carter sketch is there's a Questions with the President sketch where Bill Murray plays Walter Cronkite. And they're going through, and there's, you know, a policy question, and someone calls in and says, "I took some drugs, and I don't know where I am." And Bill Murray tries to cut him off. So, "Well, the president doesn't have enough time." And then Jimmy Carter cuts him off and says, "No, I can talk him down. What kind of pills did you take? And were they orange barrel shaped? Okay, here's what you took." And he's going through. He's like, "What you need to do is take yourself a cold shower. Get yourself a tall glass of water or some coffee," and he's talking the guy down, and it's, but yeah, they just.
When did the impersonations start getting good? Because like Chevy Chase didn't even try to look or sound like Gerald Ford, but I mean, obviously the Bill Clinton stuff was pretty spot on. When did they actually start looking or trying to actually impersonate the presidents?
I think it was after the cast switch in after the fifth season when Lorne Michaels left. Because I think after that point, they had – because even the Jimmy Carter impersonation, I mean, I think maybe Dan Aykroyd would wear a blonde wig. But he had a mustache at the time, didn't shave that. I was 15 years old before I realized that Jimmy Carter didn't have a mustache, like, or that Gerald Ford didn't have hair. But so neither one of those guys really tried to look like the president.
Ironically, Chevy Chase today, spitting image of Gerald Ford.
Yeah, see, they just should have waited. That's the problem. It was just that they tried to do those sketches too early. But I think after they were kind of an established brand, you had people that you tuned in to watch, but then those people started leaving. So you had initially the not ready for primetime players, and then you'd have the Dan Aykroyds and the John Belushis and Bill Murrays would emerge from that group. But then eventually those guys leave, and the entire slate gets wiped clean in 1980. But I think at that point they tried to do a little bit more makeup because they almost had to. You know, if Dan Aykroyd was doing an impression of Jimmy Carter, it was okay because it was Dan Aykroyd, and you kind of knew him. On the other hand, Reagan was probably just such an easy person to do hair and makeup for. I mean, you just put on a jet black wig and a little bit of rouge on the cheeks and,
well,
okay, we've got Ronald Reagan.
There they go.
Yeah, tilt your head to the side. And
so what about, like, some of the losers? Like, I don't remember Bob Dole, but I'm guessing they had somebody who used Bob Dole thinks this and Bob Dole.
Yeah, that was Norm Macdonald.
Oh, okay, that's right. That's right.
Then did you? Now this, see, this may be after your time. Do you remember Bob Dole on The Real World?
No, I don't.
This is.
I do remember the Janet Reno dance party.
Yeah, Janet Reno. Well, see, Janet Reno kind of rolled with that too. I mean, she showed up for one of those sketches and made light of it. And actually, Bob Dole appeared in one. Tried to lessen the blow from him, from the result of the 96 election. But
well, yeah, Bob Dole got real funny after the election. Like, after he lost, he apparently became quite humorous and started doing Viagra ads and whatnot.
Well, as he said to Dave Letterman, he has plenty of time now to write jokes. So it's and Bob Dole, I think, was probably another one of those people who wasn't necessarily hurt by his impressions on Saturday Night Live, but it's, if anything, he probably got more exposure because of it. There's a great sketch of Romney right after the election out on the veranda of his house, just chugging milk as if he was, you know, drowning his sorrows.
Have they done anything with Putin yet? I feel like Putin and Obama, or even envisioning a Putin-Trump summit would be quite good.
You know, not that I've seen, but I'm not watching it religiously week after week like I used to. But, you know, that actually brings up another interesting point. Each person who's a fan of the show, like we both are, seems like they go through a period of time in their life where they're watching it every week without fail, appointment television, and then eventually grow out of it, start doing other things on Saturday night. But it hasn't really hurt the show's cultural significance.
Okay, for me, it was high school was when, you know, the Wayne's World era, that was my time. I don't know if that's when everyone's time is or if it's earlier or later or what.
That, you're not the first person I've heard say that.
Right, but that's what's great about this. You're old enough to stay up late, but you're not going to get laid and you can't get into a bar. So
So high school is the perfect time
perfect
for
timing.
It. So everyone kind of has that time in their life, though, where they're you know, they have peak Saturday Night Live. And then eventually you grow out of it and maybe only catch a little bit here or there. But I think they've really adapted well to the internet era. It took them a while, but they did it, you know, where now you can catch, you know, a clip here. Or I don't know. Did you watch last week's episode, the season premiere?
Oh, no. Hell no. I just saw the clips. And, I mean, I think that's the thing. Like, they're, you know, cable news, the political skits, cable news runs them. You're going to see them on – it's like The Daily Show or any other show nowadays. I mean, Jimmy Fallon maybe was the first guy to really do this right about having the viral videos. I mean, that's got to be a big part of it, right?
Yeah, and what show is better – equipped to have viral – I mean, before viral video was a term, Saturday Night Live had viral videos. I mean, there were sketches that you'd hear about on Monday that you couldn't wait for it to be in reruns so that you could see it if you missed the live show. Now you've got YouTube, so there's no need for that.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, that we sort of haven't mentioned but we've alluded to is just how the show ebbs and flows. I mean, not only is there a peak time in our lives when we're watching it, but – you know, there are times when the show is better than others. I mean, and that it's sort of cyclical.
There have definitely been, if you're a regular watcher of the show, there have definitely been some times where I think it was Phil Hartman's last year. They end with this big musical number, but they have all the characters come out and they're talking about why it was such a horrible year on Saturday Night Live. And it was the sketch they ended the year with. And it's kind of funny because you look at this and you say, well, okay, even they knew,
Yeah. Look,
some of the stuff we're putting out is just schlock. But even within the good years, if you watch a show straight through, and out of maybe 50 to 60 minutes of comedy, maybe half of it is funny in a good year,
Yeah. You
know, so it's not. So, but they just keep throwing volume at you and, you know, the good stuff sticks, and the good stuff sticks so well that you talk about it on Monday morning and you watch it on YouTube and the cable news and network news even are talking about it the next day. And if Hillary Clinton's in your sketch, then everyone's still pointing it at you and saying Saturday Night Live, 40 years old and still a player in the political game.
So, I mean, there have to be – okay, so like there was the news, so Chevy Chase – did Gerald Ford, but he did the news. Dennis Miller did the news. I don't know if he ever did any skits at all. But there have to be a lot of cast members who never did any political stuff, right? So, like, I can't think of Mike Myers ever doing any political stuff.
Oh, he did the Prime Minister's Questions sketches.
Oh, okay.
But no, not American politics, but well, the, you know,
well,
the
he
other
is Canadian, so.
But yeah, I think this it probably depends on what your interests
right.
are.
And then the other thing too, man, is it is weird that like there's a U.S. senator now who was on SNL, Al Franken. You've got Victoria Jackson, who ran for I don't know, city council or state rep somewhere. You've got Dennis Miller, who is, to a certain degree, a conservative commentator and radio host. You have, wasn't it, who was it? John Lovitz, didn't he come out against Obama or something a while ago?
Yeah, he had a rant about Obama. Well, I would imagine that if you're writing Saturday Night Live, and we talked about them being under the gun each week to produce a 90 minutes of entertainment, and they've got a week to do it, and trying to figure out stuff to think about. I mean, think about it, Matt. You write for what, 18 different publications?
Give or take.
You know, you're I mean, look, you're a senior contributor at the Daily Caller.
True.
You're an editor at the Week.
True.
We can see your stuff on the Daily Beast.
Guilty.
We can find a podcast, the Matt Lewis
yep.
in the News.
True.
We can see you on cable news.
Occasionally.
So I'm rattling off five different places you have to generate smart content for. I would imagine sometimes that's a challenge. And so if you have to do that every week where you're
yeah, they're not all going to be home runs, you know.
And not only that, you're looking, okay, where can I find some inspiration? Let me pick up the newspaper. Let me check out the news. And maybe there's something that's topical that I could have some kind of funny take on. Do you like the way I've worked all your stuff in?
It was
in?
Really organic, like quite seamless.
It would have worked too if I didn't bring it up just now.
I think it still worked. You did mention my book. You missed my book, and you missed my fortnightly column at the London Telegraph as well. So I am also international, Jim. I said Bill. I'm used to doing. I do this show with Bill Scher. But here's the deal, okay? So I do interviews all the time, but I'm usually not comfortable. I mean, I'm usually have to be on because I'm doing an interview with somebody I don't know. But when I'm talking to Bill Scher, because we do it every week and he's my friend, I like let my guard down. And you were like in that category too. You're in the inner circle, so hence the Bill reference.
I'm going to put that on my business card. Matt Lewis's inner circle. Well, Matt, I'm sure we'll be emailing about this week's sketches after we watch them on YouTube on Monday because we fall asleep at 10 p.m. on Saturday nights now.
Indeed, we have kids, but thank God we have DVR.
That's right. That's exactly right. Well, Matt, thank you very much for celebrating the 40th anniversary of Saturday Night Live by joining this crummy little podcast.
All right, buddy. Good talking.
Thanks for listening this and every week. You can follow the Crummy Little Podcast online at crummylittlepodcast.com. You can find us on iTunes, subscribe, and leave a review. And you can, of course, follow me on Twitter at Jim Eltringham. Thanks again for listening in.